Start your day the right way by taking charge of your physical and mental fitness.
It's important to know your numbers. They determine if your blood pressure is high or low, your cholesterol balance, even your blood sugar level, heart rate, and much more.
Get tested by visiting your doctor, clinic, or stop by at any health center closest to you.
Take control today. This message is from Doctors on Air with Dr. Pamela.
This is Doctors on Air with Dr. Pamela.
Good morning. Today we'll be talking about the right to health. My health, my right. Thank you, Dr. Dibo and Naomi, Mrs. Naomi Adoku, for coming on the program today to talk about this very important topic about our right to health. Now, we are talking about it obviously because it's the theme for this year's World Health Day, which comes up on the 7th of April. But you know, what people don't know is that, you know, what are their rights? And in a country like Nigeria, where people sometimes stand up to try and get their rights and their rights seem to be being trampled on, people wonder, do I have any rights? What are my rights? So can you explain what are the kind of rights, Mrs. Naomi, if you can just start it off, what are the kind of rights a person has with regard to health? What are my rights?
Thank you, Dr. Pamela Ajayi. Thank you. In terms of course, my health, my rights, it really just underscores the imperative for an individual to have the freedom and the support necessary to prioritize and safeguard my health. So how do I prioritize and safeguard my health? For me, really, it will be accessibility. It will be affordability. And of course, the quality of service that I'm getting. And how is that quality of service in terms of how it meets me? So for me to have that freedom and prioritize it, how do I ensure that truly my rights are met? You know, these are the things that would uphold in terms of, you know, my rights to that equitable service that I am getting and the outcomes that I receive from the healthcare that I get. So I believe that truly this is what underscores my health and my right.
Yeah, sorry, Gabriel, carry on.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that, you know, access to information about your health and then the privacy of your information also constitutes as parts of your right to as a patient.
Yes.
No, you mentioned something to do with discrimination, that we should have it regardless of, you know, our socioeconomic status and the issues to do with maybe our tribe or our race, you know. But, you know, as Nigerians, this issue is socioeconomic status is very key. Mm-hmm. Because as you know, 70% of payment is out of pocket and people really don't have access to care. You know, how do you think we can manage it? Because we're talking about having a right to that care.
Right. I think really one of the major mechanisms is really what you call health insurance. What is health insurance? How am I able to get something that protects me financially? You know, and that's a policy that would ensure that I've paid for it and I can access a hospital at any time, any point in time, and truly that hospital will attend to me because I do have a cover. It's protection. That's what health insurance is, and it is a form of financial protection. It reduces your out-of-pocket payments and ensures that truly you can access healthcare anywhere at any point in time, regardless of who you are or status or anything of the sort.
Yeah, and I think that's very important because, yeah, you know, one of the major dimensions when it comes to inability to access healthcare is the financial aspect of it. Access, as we know, at different levels of quality, is actually present. There's supply, there are private hospitals, there are some primary healthcare centers, there are even traditional health providers. But one of the major issues is the ability to actually pay. So insurance will solve most of the problem. And then we'll now start to think about the other things about how do we actually empower the patients to exercise it, right?
To add to that, Debo, I think even with the, when you say ability, I think the major issue is also still the lack of awareness. Yes. A lot of people do not even know that truly there is this health insurance and it can, you know, ensure that these things are met. So it's really that lack of awareness. And how do we drive that in a society where you have a lot of religiosity, a lot of, in terms of the literacy level being so, how do we drive that? How do we advocate for people to take up the plans or, you know, to access it and ensure that truly the taste of the pudding is in the eating?
Yeah. No, you're very, very right. And I think very important for us to talk about this access and very important for us to also break it down, because people are listening and they're saying, you know, this health insurance of a thing, you know, is it national health insurance? Is it Lagos State insurance? Is it HMO insurance? Which one am I supposed to be going for? Which one is the best one for me? Maybe if I'm an individual, I'm not in a corporate organization, you know, how do I get access to something like that?
Yeah, I think that's a very important area that we have actually not been looking at as players in the space, because first, we know there are a lot of barriers to uptake of insurance. And as a result of that, we should be a bit more aggressive in letting people know the benefits of these different packages or these different forms of insurance. Essentially, to put it out there, it's as you go from a government-funded social insurance package like what we have with the state insurance, or we have by the former NHIS, now the NHIA, which is the regulator, we start to see basic packages, things that are tailored more towards the poorer populations, such that their basic needs are covered, especially prevention, things like nutrition. When you now go further, you know, into larger packages, where, like you say, the state health insurance family plans, you get access to general hospitals, as well as other public centers and some private centers. That range of access increases when you move to the private health insurance, and we have the private health insurance being provided by local HMOs as well as some international HMOs. So you could also buy some international plans if you're looking to get very high-end cover and would like to get services outside the country. So it's a very wide range, and again, it's tied to how much you're willing to pay as well as the sort of access that you want to get at the end of the day.
All right.
Thank you. I think specifically, if I can ask you, Naomi, about the issue of individuals who are, you know, not associated with corporate organizations, how do they get access to care? And also, we understand that the certain HMOs, you know, don't provide insurance for the elderly. If you're over 60 or so, it becomes a challenge for you to get actual insurance. You know, can you tell us a bit more about this and how people listening can overcome some of these barriers?
Right. Just like I said again, it's also, I mean, there's the need to educate and create awareness, because these health insurance plans do exist outside of even the corporates. I mean, a lot of us have targeted the corporates, but when you look at it in terms of market, less than 5%. So it tells you that truly that market is still very small. So we haven't covered the informal sector, but we do have plans for the informal sector. Even, plans that, just like Debo attested to, the basic healthcare package is a plan that is as low as 15,000 naira, and it covers the basics. But people aren't aware. We have plans that cover for the informal sector for individuals, you know, but people aren't aware. And then even in terms of accessibility of being able to purchase these plans are some of the things that we need to work on. For my HMO, we have plans targeted at senior citizens, which we call the senior citizens plans. And we understand that truly there is in terms of the life cycle, there is a different, you know, time in life where you require a different kind of health, cover. And we have developed and created this plan. So people above age 65 can get this. And what we've done is target people in the diaspora, for instance, who need this. We also look at, you know, there are young people who necessarily don't have health issues, but have elderly parents, uncles and aunties, and they can purchase these plans either online or at our physical shops, you know, but we need to create a lot more awareness around it. because people do not know. And that's a major thing we have to do in terms of advocacy and collaboration and partnerships with other organizations just to drive this. But they exist today and they are readily affordable and accessible.
No, I think that's very important for people to be aware of. Just as an aside, I actually also have a plan, but I've also had challenges. Sometimes I've been to, try and get care, and they've said, oh, your HMO is not accepted here. So how do we, that happens. So yes, what do we need to do? How do we, figure out what plan was accepted where and get the kind of healthcare that one needs? Because that kind of experience then leads people to go out and say, this HMO thing, I have an HMO, I paid for it, and yet I can't get my care. It puts people off.
So yes, right, there are a lot of gaps, service gaps that exist. And we as an entire ecosystem, the truth is we need to work more collaboratively together. It's a known fact that the healthcare providers are antagonistic towards the HMOs. And sometimes it's just driven by the fact that HMOs are not paying in good time when they should pay in terms of obligations to the healthcare providers. But when you are, in the process of purchasing a plan, it is important to understand, what does my plan cover? There, it is also important to understand the network of hospitals, and the kind of relationship that your HMO has with these hospitals to ensure seamless access. But another major driver for access is technology. I always say the banks have done it so well. How have the banks done it so well? But we need to be able to drive technology so that people have access, can see, there's transparency, and, they're able to do all of that. But we're working on it. It's a lot of work.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Doctors on Air with Dr. Pamela.
Debo, you are an IT guru. You've had telemedicine platforms, etc. Worked on so many things. You're an innovation head. Tell us a bit more on how you feel technology can help us in this regard.
I started. I think the major thing to really put into context when we think about what technology can do is that when we think about healthcare, the major thing we're doing is communication and engagement. So we need one type of user, which is the professional, the doctor, and another type of user is the patient. The patient will typically want to engage the professional for a problem, and they would require a consultation or a surgery or whatever it is. That's the typical sort of engagement that we have in healthcare. Now, those engagements will typically happen in the location, a physical infrastructure or a facility. Now, with technology, we can take off that physical infrastructure requirement and get the engagement directly between these two people directly online. This could be in form of a phone call, or a chat, or a message, or a video call. And that's what we've done with telemedicine. And with telemedicine, you're having the access to multiple online channels to discuss whatever it is you want to discuss. But things are going a step further now, and we're seeing that with AI, we can teach the computer a lot of things, and once you ask the question, the computer will give you a very verified answer. Now we're teaching this AIs more medical things and getting them to engage with the patients so that we can free up time for the doctors. Now, if you look at the scenario we are in Nigeria, where we don't have enough doctors, we don't have enough nurses, we don't have enough healthcare professionals broadly, this AI can come in to do a lot of the engagement. Now, the other question is, how accessible would this be? Would it be limited to people with smartphones and, only people who are a lot more tech savvy? And those are the barriers that we'll need to overcome if we're really going to get healthcare access to the last mile. And by last mile, I'm saying very hard to reach communities where there's poor internet collection, there's no healthcare facility, there's no road access, but people live there and they need to also get care because it's their right.
It is their right. I'm glad you said that. It is absolutely their right. And also, what about the issue was mentioned earlier about data privacy? Because when you know one is afraid, you may put your information out on the internet, next thing you know, all these hackers are there. They have access to your information. Sometimes your information is sensitive. You know, people have done HIV tests. People have done all sorts of things. They're things that people don't want out there. How are they, you know, are they secure in the today's current climate of technology? What else do they need to do to be safe?
Great. So with most of the platforms out there, the electronic medical records being deployed by hospitals, there's a strong layer of cybersecurity. And this is a requirement because you're also, in addition to your records being collected, even back in the days when we were using paper files, you had the right to, you know, that information being secure. So we're doing the same with tech, but it's another area where the government really needs to weigh in terms of setting policies and frameworks, as well as putting in the right regulation in terms of the types of electronic medical records that people can use, the management of their cloud servers, because a lot of them use cloud services, and that means that you're storing the information in a completely different location. But they all have to be compliant to the Nigerian data privacy regulation. And I think that data privacy regulation is what really needs to be enforced more. NITA is on that aggressively, and most organizations really collect information, especially identifying information for patients, have to have, you know, gotten some data compliance. Beyond that, we also need to recognize that this data is important. It's actually important for research. So there's still a need for us to create the scenarios where we're able to use that information without disclosing or creating harm to the patient. It's the patient's right to know that the information is being used for research, regardless of whether you are providing the full information or not.
So we have to make sure patients sign consent forms.
Yes.
Right.
They need to sign consent forms, even when you're going to anonymize the data to use for clinical trials, but they should still sign the consent forms to release their data for use.
But I also
Please carry on.
I was just going to add that, you know, I also think technology drives transparency in the system as well. So that also helps to, you know, in terms of the advancements that we are seeing, you know. So for instance, you have mobile apps where people can also help with their own self-management, and that also drives your right to your health as well, just putting it in the hands of the patients.
And that's the major thing, because healthcare is drastically changing. We're having to deal with a lot of costs, and majorly the cost profile of organizations will determine how much they will charge for services. So we are starting to think about it and start to think, what are the things that patients can do themselves that we don't require doctors or healthcare workers to do for them? How can we get these patients to be able to do it themselves, right? Most times it's by creating a digital or automated process that an AI or just simple forms and flows, simple education prompts, so that patients can start to do things themselves. And when we start talking about things themselves, we're thinking about taking their blood sugar, taking their blood pressure measurements, knowing what to eat, you know, selecting their meals with right information, right? So I know that the reason why I've done my plate like this is because I'm trying to get 20% carbs, 40% protein. You know, when patients start to get to that level of education and awareness, then we know we've gotten a huge burden out of the focus of the healthcare professionals. Then they can focus on the really sick people in hospitals.
Yeah, I think that's actually something we've always talked about. This program was actually the first primary preventive care program in Nigeria in terms of health, in terms of talking about preventive care. I'm so happy that, you know, we started this 15 years ago. Now it's very strong. Prevention, prevention, prevention. Let's try and prevent ourselves from getting sick. The body is a meaningless organ, and if it's treated usually, it can actually overcome a whole lot of insults. But talking about this issue of prevention, how much prevention do the HM provide in terms of screening tests, etc.? Do those packages, are they covered?
Oh, absolutely. And why, just to, you know, it's, we always say prevention is better than cure, and it can also, you know, help to even reduce costs a whole lot further. Why not prevent this disease rather than, you know, ensuring it comes on? So in terms of initiatives we have, you know, kind of put together, one of these is, you know, the annual wellness screenings. It's covered. It's important that you get checked annually. And we try to drive, especially the HR managers, to kind of enforce it within, you know, their workforce to go for an annual wellness screening, either at the beginning of their year or, you know, for some people, it could be marked to their birthdays so they don't forget. Another thing we do is to go into, you know, provide health talks. And we collaborate also with communities towards, you know, sponsoring outreaches where we come to speak about certain issues, some topical issues, you know, just to drive awareness around this and how, you know, they can be prevented. But a lot of collaboration also with the healthcare providers, you know, where we come in and have those checks, routine checks are done from time to time, just basic checks like your blood sugar, you know, your numbers, and driving us the awareness around your numbers. What are the important numbers to know? So these are some of the initiatives that we have embarked on. You know, for some of them, it's even for free because we come in from an advocacy level, right? But for the wellness checks, these are covered under the health insurance plans. But for the talks and the engagement sessions, we are heavy on that. We do a lot of it just to promote wellness and to ensure that people are aware and know, you know, just basic things that they need to know about their health, eating right, you know, checking your eyes, you know, and things like that. Because we say it all the time, prevention is, you know, the best form of care.
Always.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Now, unfortunately, the program's coming to an end. We just have time for our wrap up. So would you perhaps like to just give us your last words? But I mean, there's actually so much that we wanted to talk about. Some people are asking things like, you know, but anyway, I think we probably have to go for another program because we have so many other issues to discuss. Can you give us some last words for our listeners?
So maybe I should start. I will just, you know, in commemoration, of course, of World Health Day, it's important to understand that truly health is a fundamental human right. And we need to, you know, begin to know that we have access. And this also requires some kind of collaborative efforts, you know, from individuals, from communities, from the government, you know, and organizations as well, to be able to drive the fact that truly health is a fundamental human right. And we should, you know, ensure that we collaborate to ensure that everyone is covered, has some form of health cover that ensures that truly they can access healthcare and they can afford it to be able to stay well and be well for a productive nation.
Thank you very much, Debo.
I agree, Naomi. It's very important. And for me, it's more important that we start to remodel our thinking towards healthcare. We need it to be more patient-centered. Even if we can't get all the way down to the patient, let's get it more community-centered. So that the community has that right and they can band together and, you know, take care of what the patients require individually. We also need to do a lot more work in advocacy to drive health insurance coverage. We need to do a lot more work to empower the patients and drive the adoption of digital technologies. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you both very much for coming on the program.
Doctors on Air with Dr. Pamela.